When an extreme weather event threatens, we often hear forecasts giving wind speeds in miles per hour or how many inches of rain we can expect. Although this is helpful, it leaves residents a little bit confused sometimes, wondering what this will actually look like on the ground. This episode of the GeoTrek podcast is all about visualization. We have Dan Kruger, the lead technical field producer of Flood Vision, a project of Climate Central. He's coming on the podcast to talk about what if you could envision what a flood event would look like in your community before it even strikes. Hey everyone, I'm Hurricane Hal, host of the GeoTrek podcast. On the GeoTrek podcast, we explore the world to bring you stories about extreme weather and natural disasters not covered by the mainstream media. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow our content online. This will help you get notifications so you don't miss any of our latest content. And also your support of the channel helps ensure many more episodes of the GeoTrek podcast in the future. So without further introduction, let's have this conversation with Dan Kruger, the lead technical field producer of Flood Vision, a project by Climate Central. Dan, thank you so much for taking time to come on the GeoTrek podcast.
Thanks for having me, Hal. Appreciate being here.
Dan, you have an amazingly broad background in television production, digital marketing, and PR social media industries. I mean, you've done a lot in media and social media. Could you share with us about your path into and through these different industries?
Sure. So I have a very eclectic background. I went to school for media communications in the 90s, and obviously things have evolved tremendously since then. So I started out in, you know, doing video production for medical videos, and then I got a job with a television station, and then into a production company where I was able to start out as an associate producer on some HGTV shows, and then started producing television for some shows that were on TLC, and did some syndicated work as well. You know, a fun show that I worked on for four seasons was a blind date type show called A Dating Story. And I got to travel all over the country and match people up, and it was a lot of fun.
Was there like a huge learning curve to that? I mean, it's one thing to study it, but all of a sudden you're like traveling around, interacting with guests and getting them on air. I mean, what was the learning curve like for that?
I mean, just being in the field as an associate producer, you sort of get your chops and you learn how things work. I was an associate producer on a show called A Baby Story, where I was in the delivery room for 10 different births before my own children were born. So it was, it was trial by fire, but it was pretty cool.
It sounds like a job that could never possibly get boring because you're like in all these different situations, right?
100%. Yeah. And this was, I mean, back then, this was early 2000s. We had beepers. You know, we were on call like doctors were when these people that we were following for that particular show went into labor. We had to be ready, and it was pretty cool. And then things evolved. You know, shows have a finite amount of episodes that are shot, and then I became freelance for quite a long time, about 10 to 15 years. So that's how I got into sort of digital marketing. You probably might or might not remember, there was a thing called Second Life, which was like this 3D virtual world that this was pre-social media. And I was brought in because I had a television background and I was also computer savvy. And they wanted someone with that type of background to sort of produce in this virtual environment. And so we were putting, people didn't know, or businesses didn't know where to spend their money pre-social media. And they were, Second Life seemed like a good option. So we had, clients like, HBO and Pontiac and Bantam Dell and all sorts of companies that were getting into this virtual environment. And then things changed tremendously with Twitter and Facebook and the rest.
Yeah. I mean, it's just amazing to look back. I mean, we can see it in our individual lives, right? Like how we interacted, going from using a computer for email and then eventually to like, the news and social media and watching movies. I mean, everything's evolved so much. So looking back at this, as you look at your career in TV and digital media and social media, like what are some lessons you've learned about creating high quality content?
So, I mean, and this is what I tell younger folks now. I mean, not to date myself as too old, but you know, work hard when you're young. You know, you're going to meet people in this field, and you might know these people for years and years. You're not thinking that when you're a young kid and you just break into, you know, to whatever field you're in, but you really want to put in the work early so that people know that you know you're a hard worker and this is somebody that you'd want to work with again.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice. And a lot of times people have more time, right? They might not have kids yet. You know, they're fresh out of school. It's like you can put in those long weeks. You have the time for it if you're willing to put in the effort, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So I'm sorry. Yeah, keep going, Dan. This is fantastic.
It evolved after Second Life. We did, you know, I did, you know, now there's influencer marketing everywhere. Everybody's an influencer. Everybody's a content creator. But pre that, you know, there was things called blogs. People wrote on, you know, on the internet, and they would post their thoughts and feelings based on certain demographics and, you know, whatever they're interested in. And so I worked for a company, and we reached out to bloggers on behalf of clients to get them to write about whatever they were, you know, wanted to get out there. But also we found sort of people were already talking about things online that people are interested in or businesses were doing. So we would sort of tap those people in order to amplify, you know, whatever it is that we were trying to get out there.
Oh yeah. Back in the day, I mean, blogging was, it seems really like archaic now, right? But it was this way, like anyone could express their thoughts on this weblog, right? I mean, it seems archaic, but at the time it was innovative.
Exactly. Now it's podcasting and YouTube and everything else.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's evolved so much. So Dan, this is amazing. So you're the technical field producer for a project called Flood Vision with Climate Central. And when I met you, you were driving around the country, like driving streets in flood-prone communities, grabbing all this technology to put it into Flood Vision. So tell us a little bit about Flood Vision. What is it and why is it so important?
Sure. So to step back a little bit, just to relate this to something that happened in my past, you know, with Second Life, I had a former colleague that had always gotten into climate work after we all sort of went our separate ways, but we always stayed in touch. And about 4 years ago, he'd reached out to me regularly over the course of our careers, but he told me about this project that was launching called Flood Vision. And he was looking for somebody that had a flexible schedule, and I was freelance, and that also had technical knowledge, like of cameras and that sort of thing, and was also computer savvy and strong as well, and like physically strong. And I'll get into that. But so basically, Flood Vision launched because Climate Central, which gives data and information to meteorologists and you know, everyone all around the world about climate change, launched this project under the sea level rise team called Flood Vision. It came because they had shown called Picturing Our Future, some visuals of iconic locations around the world as to what it could look like in the future with sea level rise. And these visuals sort of went viral, and they thought, well, what if we could do this at scale, you know, with something like that. And so our computational scientist, Scott Culp, and our CEO, Ben, got together and thought about this and figured out a way to make it happen. And so Flood Vision was born, and it started with two professional cameras, a LiDAR, which is a, you know, shoots out laser, and a very precise GPS unit. And Scott coded all this together from scratch, and I came in right as we were basically putting it into the field. And so we mounted this onto a vehicle and took lots of measurements. And essentially what it does is, so that was the very start of it. We've evolved considerably since then with the project, but basically we have a set of stereoscopic cameras. So stereoscopic cameras kind of film the world as your eyes would see it in 3D, right? So you have two cameras, and then there's a LiDAR, which is a laser point cloud that's overlaid over that 3D stereoscopic image. And then we have a GPS unit that's overlaid over all that so that we can very precisely tell what the elevation is of every pixel in that visual that we're collecting. And so we went from just two cameras and one LiDAR on the roof of the vehicle so I had to drive every street twice so that we could get both sides, to putting four cameras up there and two LiDAR and multiple and very precise GPS unit. We validate all of that, and it's pretty crazy. So we went from a rental vehicle. We bought then after that a Toyota Highlander Hybrid, which we equipped, and it's sitting in my driveway right now. Then we launched the Edge of America tour in June of 2024, which the Edge of America tour was sort of a dream of what if we could collect data all down the East Coast and around the Gulf. And so we started in Blue Hill, Maine in June of 2024, and we finished in South Padre Island, Texas in January of 2025. And it was basically driving through iconic locations that people recognizable locations so that if there ever was a storm or a hurricane that came to that area, we could quickly spin up visuals that would show precisely and scientifically accurate what it could look like with water levels based, you know, on either historical storm conditions or future sea level rise conditions.
Well, Dan, this is amazing because you have the elevation of every pixel and you have these, you know, millions and millions of pixels. So you can basically recreate what, say, 2 feet, 3 feet, 4 feet of water would look like and almost take one setting and show what it would look like as water rises, essentially, and at different water levels, right?
Exactly. That's sort of a thing I overlooked in my rambling explanation there. But yes, as we're collecting anywhere that we drive these vehicles while we're collecting data, we can then, based on either the elevation there or, you know, as a meteorologist, if a meteorologist says like, hey, this location could get 2 to 4 feet of storm surge, we can show exactly what that would look like at that particular location. And so like the data that we have our computational scientist, Scott Culp, takes all that data and has to process all of it, especially like the GPS data has to be processed for the curvature of the Earth at that particular location, atmospheric conditions at the particular time and location that we drove at this location. There's a lot of moving parts that goes into it, and it's pretty cool.
Dan, this is just amazing because you're taking iconic landmarks, right, in different cities. Like when you came to Galveston, I know your team was interacting with me and said, what are some iconic landmarks? And Rosenberg Library came to mind, and also the downtown area near the Strand in Galveston came to mind. Like if you could show what the water would look like there, people could visualize, oh my gosh, that would flood my house, or oh my gosh, that's worse than I've ever seen, right? So you're enabling really help people, all these people in a community understand how bad the flooding could be based on some visuals of iconic landmarks.
Exactly. In addition to iconic landmarks, we show like firehouses, police stations, city hall, hospitals, schools, things that locally you would recognize if something was coming towards where you live. You know, we're not trying to devalue homes by showing private residences, but we do want to make people aware. You know, you hear after every storm or every hurricane that people didn't expect it to be this bad, or they'd never seen this in the 50 years they've lived there. They never expected this to be that bad. But if we could show them ahead of time, if a storm's coming, this is what it could look like at your location or at the street that's up the block from you, then we could warn people ahead of time and maybe make a difference with people, you know, evacuating when they're told to.
Oh, for sure. You know, Dan, we had award-winning meteorologist Rob Perillo on the podcast, and he was talking about humanizing forecasts, that we could say 4 feet of storm surge, but people don't know what that means, right? Or we could say the winds are going to be so many miles an hour. Well, what does that mean, right? And so I think flood vision is helping people see what that means in their community.
Exactly. I mean, you could look at a map, and you can draw a line on a map, and it's going to come to here, this line on the map. But a line on a map, people say, oh, well, I live on the other side of that line. It's, you know, when you see the actual water levels that, you know, even a few inches of water can be devastating. You know, just, you know, imagine two to three, 4 feet of storm surge, and, you know, people lose everything, and it's scary.
Well, and Dan, it's really interesting too. There's tremendous value in this for long-term planning with things like sea level rise. But then you also mentioned with storm surge. I mean, if people think, well, the water might not look like this for 150 years, it'll be long after my life, right? I might not worry about it. But if you say, well, this could happen next year in a hurricane in your community, all of a sudden it makes it very urgent and relevant for an audience of people, right?
Exactly. And I think people think in terms of a 30-year mortgage now. And if you can say like within that 30-year mortgage, where your house is or where your business or structure is, this is what it could look like just with sea level rise. And that's not including the, you know, 1% annual or 10% annual, you know, flooding event that seemed to be coming a lot more regularly than just 1% anymore.
So Dan, like, how can visual tools like flood vision or even other concepts or brainstorms out there, how do you think they could help forecasters or scientists communicate flood risk with communities or any kind of risk?
Sure, sure. So like I said, I mean, we actually have a custom neural network that creates these visuals based on the scientific at the elevation of every pixel within that visual. So it takes into account, like if we're driving through downtown Galveston and where there's buildings and they're brown in color, and it takes into account all the lighting, everything, and it masks it like an artist would do in Photoshop and draw that water across. But basically this is using every single visual is completely different. But taking those visuals now, a meteorologist or, you know, your local newscaster could show this to that. It's much more impactful to see a recognizable location that's in your community than it is just to say, hey, the winds are going to be 30 or 50 miles an hour, or we're supposed to get 3 inches of rain. If they can show what 3 inches of rain could look like at a particular location, then it's a powerful tool.
Dan, what does the availability of flood vision look like going forward? Like, would there be a website where people can grab some images? Is it more for professionals, or eventually could you see it being widespread for anyone to grab some images?
So a little bit of both. So right now we have floodvision.org where you can go and basically kind of see what the program is. But also we just launched a site called floodriskviewer.org, which lives on our climatecentral.org website. Excuse me. But basically for meteorologists or anyone that's interested, they can go on there. We've curated a number of locations that we've driven through throughout the country, and they can see what different water levels, either sea level rise or just groundwater levels, could look like at a particular location. And they can download those visuals.
Oh, for sure. No, that's great. I know people are going to be excited to check that out, at least learn more about this exciting project. Dan, we're already at the segment of the podcast called Weathered Wisdom. So we want to ask you, what extreme weather event left the biggest impression on you? It could be something that impacted you personally or professionally, but it's something that it could have surprised you, or it could have just been something that you've never seen before. It was so extreme, it left a long-lasting impression on you. What's your weathered wisdom?
I mean, mine's probably not as exciting as some of the guests that you've had in the past, but, you know, I live in Pennsylvania. Like, I'm sort of, you know, at a much higher elevation than a coastal community. And so, we had some heavy storms a few years back in the summertime. And, this isn't super exciting, but my basement flooded. Right. And that's like we have some pumps in our basement. I know you may not have a basement if you live in a coastal community, but you know, we have two sump pumps in the basement and they both failed and we had no idea. And it's a helpless feeling watching water rise in your home and like trying to scramble and lift things up and get things out of the way and elevated. And it was just it's a feeling that, you know, I have empathy for anyone who's had flooding events at their home or business or anything like that. Cause it's the worst feeling just watching things that, you know, your things, luckily no one was hurt or it's just, but looking at your things getting ruined and it's not a fun feeling. And I feel for everyone. I hope that what we're doing with flood vision can help people and, you know, avoid those types of events.
Dan, there's something about that personal impact, right? I mean, you could see water in a million different buildings, but when it's in your house, all of a sudden it's like, wait, that's my, you know, that's my notebook that I needed or my family photos or whatever it is. All of a sudden it's that personal impact that really stands out.
Yeah. I mean, I lost all my books. You know, I'm a big reader and I had all these hardback books in boxes that they got flooded and wet and they were ruined. And it's not a good feeling, but yeah. We're hoping that what we're doing now is will be helpful to people.
Yeah, Dan, I know it's going to make a difference. I know just from people I've talked to about it. I was in touch with Dan Rizza from Climate Central, and we were talking science behind this, and he said, hey, you can use some of these images from Galveston. When I spoke at the National Tropical Weather Conference in April, I took a street in Galveston, and I showed them with different water levels with flood vision. I mean, people's eyes were like saucers. They were like, oh my gosh, that like, but you could actually incrementally show a water level rise without it actually happening in the real world. It's like they had never seen anything like that before. I think Flood Vision is going to help so many people visualize, but then take action and prepare.
It's a very powerful tool. One thing that I did not mention that we're also in the data that we're collecting is that any home or structure that we pass, we are able to, within just a few centimeters, estimate what the entry floor elevation of that home is. And we're currently working on a model that can do communities, cities, that basically we're able to, you know, using Flood Vision's data, validate that data as well. So, which is a pretty valuable tool if you can know exactly people pay a lot of money to have a first floor elevation certificate, and you know, with insurance and city planning and that sort of thing, it's another part of Flood Vision that we think is pretty valuable.
Dan, that's a huge benefit because a lot of people don't know their elevation, and in a lot of these communities, to get a survey team to come to your house and tell you your precise elevation, from what I've heard, it can often be $400, $500. It sounds like with Flood Vision, you're already driving these streets, scanning them. You can actually pull these first floor elevations very accurately.
Exactly. We can drive, you know, we could take a day or two to drive through an entire city and basically know the first floor elevation of every home or structure that we pass by. So it's pretty powerful.
Yeah, Dan, that is extremely powerful. I think that'll be a big benefit. It's just good for communities to know that these data may be available from y'all. So, Dan, I wanted to kind of vision cast into the future. Like, where are we going with the future of weather and climate communication? And like, what could visualization like Flood Vision, what kind of impact could that have as we're moving forward? Basically, you know, where are we going in the future with this type of visualization?
Sure. So right now, our visuals are stills, essentially. So basically they're just, I don't like to say photograph or photo because it sounds like you can just use your phone and take a picture and then that's a photo. So we like to call it like visualizations because there's a lot of data behind it. But I think in the future we could have, obviously with AI, and I've played around with this as well, we want to maintain the scientific integrity of the data that's in that visual, but we can add moving water in those visuals, which can be, way more impactful than just a still where you see the wind and the water heights at whatever levels it is.
That's right. And that brings up a good point. When a lot of people think of flooding, they just think like a swimming pool, just water rising vertically. But as you know, like water can be moving with tremendous force and velocity with currents. It can sweep your car off the road. So it sounds like you're saying with some animations or something like that, it could maybe try to make this look more realistic or at least give people a different view of it, right?
Exactly. Now, we're not doing it to scare people. We want to still maintain, like I said, the scientific integrity of the data that is in that particular visual. But yes, that I think, you know, a moving picture could definitely be impactful.
Dan, could you see a potential scenario possibly in the distant future where something like Flood Vision kind of connects with our mapping systems and our smartphones to help us see, like, you're not going to be able to drive over that roadway up ahead because the river's over it or this part of town is going to be underwater? I mean, again, who knows what the future holds, but just getting out maybe a decade or beyond, could you see something like Flood Vision maybe working with Google Maps or iPhone Maps, things like that?
Absolutely. The data in every visual that we have the metadata in every visualization that we collect has the latitude, longitude, the elevation height at that particular location. So yes, these, you know, all the data that we collect is, it can be imported into Google or into any ArcGIS platform. So basically I could give you 10,000 visuals. And if you just put that into an ArcGIS map or even a Google map, it'll propagate exactly where those visuals were taken. And then we can show different water levels based on whatever scenario we're looking at, whether it's sea level rise or a storm. So yes.
And do you know offhand if any other organizations in the world have done anything like this? I mean, is there anything else around the world like this or is this like never been seen before?
I don't think we have many direct competitors in this particular field, but and what we have is patented as well. So a lot of our technology is patented. So I don't think so. So it is pretty unique what we're doing. We like to say we're future storm chasers. We're not storm chasers. You know, when people see the vehicles that we're out there driving, it looks kind of like, are these people like tornado, like looking for tornadoes or something? And that's one of the things that we kind of joke about that we're.
So you've probably had some people like, wait, is there a storm coming in? Should I be worried? That kind of thing. What other kind of interactions have you had with locals as you've been out driving through communities?
Sure. So, I mean, it's interacting directly with people that live in these communities, you know, the people that have lived there that know that it floods in a specific location. It's important for us to hear what they have to say as well. And, you know, we're just out there trying to help people and haven't had no negative interactions at all. Everything's been very positive. And, you know, we're people ask a lot like, hey, what is flood vision? Because they see it on the side of the vehicle and kind of explain, like, we're sort of like Google Street View, but for flooding or sea level rise.
Dan, everyone I've talked to is super excited about it. They're curious when they can see, you know, their community. I think it's just personalizing this and helping people take a different view of their flood risk or what things could potentially look like. Dan, I'm hoping we don't see any massive floods out there this year. If we do, though, I know your team with Climate Central and Flood Vision is making a difference. You're helping people prepare and take action. We so much appreciate you taking time to come on GeoTrek Podcast. As we close up, I wanted to ask you, what's one last take-home message you'd like to share with our listeners?
So a former colleague, she coined this term, if you can see the future, you can shape the future. So I think that's sort of what we're trying to do with Flood Vision, and we hope that it's helpful to people.
Yeah, Dan, I think it will be. I know it will be. And people are excited to see their community on there. Dan, thank you so much for taking time to come in the GeoTrek Podcast. Best of luck to you and your team moving forward.
Thank you, Hal. Appreciate it.
Dan, thank you so much for taking time to come on the podcast. A lot to unpack in this episode. I walked away with three major take-home points. Number one is the importance of technologies that help us visualize extreme weather. I actually had been in correspondence with the Flood Vision team, and they provided me with imagery of my hometown, Galveston, Texas, during a potential flood event. And this actually enabled us to visualize what a landmark in Galveston would look like with 2 feet of flood water in the streets, 3 feet, 4 feet, 5 feet. And I showed these slides in succession at the National Tropical Weather Conference in South Padre Island. People were mesmerized to actually see what the potential flood event would look like before it even happened. It's amazing technology. Lesson number two that I got, this really blindsided me. When we innovate, sometimes we're solving more than one problem. The Flood Vision team has been out there. They've been capturing all of this imagery for flood-prone communities to help us visualize future floods. But along the way, because they have a point cloud with millions of points as they shoot this imagery, and it has the exact elevation of each point, they can also have first floor elevation data for entire communities. Could you imagine knowing the elevation of every building in your community? That's what the Flood Vision team has been able to do. So this was almost peripheral. I don't think it was their main objective, but they were able to capture very valuable data, not only of your future floods, but also first floor elevation. And finally, a life lesson from Dan about keeping books and valuables on the lowest level. I was so sorry to hear that when his home flooded, he lost a lot of his treasured books. And it's just a reminder that we can see flooding anywhere. This was in Pennsylvania, not in a hurricane. You can see flooding in all 50 states any time of the year. And just a reminder to keep those valuables off the lowest level. You never know when a flood's going to happen. It could be from a natural disaster. It could also be from a broken pipe. But keeping those valuables up high is a good lesson as well. Those were three of the take-home points I got from this podcast with Dan Kruger. Well, thanks again, Dan, for taking time to come on the podcast. We're excited to continue following your team and seeing what kind of innovations you have in the future. Special thanks to our audience for making us one of the top podcasts on the topic of natural disasters. Your following of our podcast and your support of it has enabled us to really grow and be able to have a farther reach. So thank you so much for your support of the podcast throughout time. Also, a special thanks to CNC Catastrophe and National Claims, as well as Blue Leopard Agency. They provide support of the GeoTrek podcast. Blue Leopard Agency helps produce these episodes and publicize them and market them as well. Because of them, you're hearing this podcast and we're getting more and more reach through time. I'm the host of the GeoTrek podcast, Hurricane Hal, and I'll catch you on the next episode of the GeoTrek podcast.